Welcome everyone to episode 3 of The Dragon Reviewed. Today we will be reviewing episode 5, sorry, of... is that right, actually? Are we on episode 5?
Yeah, because they released three.
I was thinking Hawkeye, which did two.
So it's episode 3 of The Dragon Reviewed. And right. it's episode five we're reviewing of The Wheel of Time. There we go. Absolutely, totally professional start, as always. I am here, as always, Cam Clark. I'm hosting the show, and I'm here with the Malones, Christine and Kyle. How are you doing, guys?
Good.
Doing good. Good, man. Ready to talk this very, very different episode.
Yes. Different episode. Oh, interesting. I'll be interested to hear what your thoughts are, certainly on it anyway. I must admit that I kind of have graded this show when I did my written review. Mm-hmm. And then I've kind of changed my mind between then and now, so I'm going to change it slightly from what I did in my written review. But anyway, we'll get to that. First of all, spoiler policy for this show. If this is the first time that you're tuning into The Dragon Reviewed, or if you've been watching all along, you'll know how this works anyway. No book spoilers in here. I am a book reader. I've read the whole series. I'm a fan of the books. I do know what happens, and as such, I don't want to spoil that for my two guests here, Christine and Kyle, who have never read the books and are just watching the show from the first time, because that's kind of the fun of all of this, is to get people's theories, because it's the kind of show that at least lends itself to Easter eggs and theory crafting and kind of all that sort of nice fun stuff that we like to do with a TV show. So we will be spoiling everything up to and including episode 5 of The Wheel of Time, everything that's happened in this episode. So full spoilers for the show itself, but no spoilers for the books. Though I will talk about some of the changes that have been made in a non-spoiler way. Before we get into things, I'm going to pass it over to Kyle just to go over a few housekeeping things and tell you about some of our other great stuff that we've got going on.
Kyle? All right, right. Guys, of course, we're sponsored by Grow Generation, where the pros go to grow. There is a link in the description box below. There'll be an ad later on. We keep them nice and short because, well, you know, that's the script that they gave us. And luckily enough, it's nice and short. But anyways, LRMonline.com and genreverse.com are the websites. Both go to the same landing page right now, but we're getting the podcast stuff set up. Hopefully, early in the new year. The Genreverse Podcast Network is available wherever you get your podcast from: Apple, Spotify, Google, all that good stuff. And of course, the LRM YouTube channel has all of our podcasts. Most of them are video, like this, as well as Breaking Geek Radio that does audio, but pretty picture on the front. And then all of our celebrity interviews go there, so subscribe, follow, thumbs up. I know you guys can't see how many the thumbs down we have now, but hey, we'll take the hate clicks. Let us know what we're doing right or wrong. Leave some comments, reviews, and other social media information in on your screen and in the boxes below, guys. Thanks.
And it goes without saying that, you know, if you do have any comments, we'll try and include them in the show. And there's actually something I'm bringing in this week based on a comment from one of our watchers, listeners, depending where they picked it up last time. Happy to do that going forward. If there's something you want us to do more of, if there's questions you want me to ask Christy and Kyle about the show, then please let us know and we'll try and include those in.
We just ask no book spoilers in the comments, guys, for us as well as others watching the review.
It's a non-book spoiler show, so, you know, just respect that. Don't be jumping in and saying, oh, this person dies at the end or anything, because that's it's not big and it's not clever, quite frankly. But let's get into it then. So, episode 5 of The Wheel of Time. I'm going to start this week. What we'll do is, we just to explain, we're going to all take a shot at saying what we think, grading it, and then kind of move on to some theories and discussions after that. Christine, I'll start with you this week. Episode 5, take it away. What did you think?
Very emotional, very intense. Definitely not like the others. You see a lot of heartache, and I was not expecting what had happened.
Specifically...
Like the death, the suicide, and
right, gotcha.
Yeah, so we've now had two funerals with this, and it's just and it's interesting how different the funerals were. I don't know if that's done specifically or if it's just like, okay, well, we're, you know, outside of, you know, our home, outside the White Tower. Gotcha. You know, so here we'll bury our dead here, but with, you know, what happened with the warder, it's like, you know, it was, like I said, intense. I was like, dang, this is a funeral I've never thought of before. You know, like, you know, how some cultures, they have, like, their own way of dealing with grief, or, you know, death not being something to grieve at all. This was, you know, like, 11. So.
Yeah. I prefer the, non-grieving, celebrate the life, stop crying over my fucking casket and get me off the rock already.
Yeah. So you are more of a, so the way, as you said, Christine, there was two funerals. Did you enjoy the 7 at the start or the 11 at the end more?
The 11.
Okay.
I guess it was just because it was so different that I was just kind of surprised by it. And yeah. So yeah. And it's just, it's kind of weird how things are going. And, you know, it's like I'm trying not to look on my phone. It's like I'm dying to know. But I haven't yet.
Don't Google anything. I mean, don't even Google. Nope. How would you pronounce this character's name? Don't even Google that, because though it's really bad for Wheel of Time. Actually, I think because the series has been out so long that as you start typing in a name, it'll literally come up and say "died" on page. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Or and you're like, oh, it's weird. Somebody's really need to fix that in terms of how they do it in Google. But yeah. I mean, it's just the way that it goes, I guess, with the algorithm.
And I've watched all the way through twice, so I now know that it's Nynaeve instead. So I'm like, I'm glad that I found that out instead of trying to look it up.
At least how they're pronounced.
Well, yeah, how they're pronouncing it in the show.
If you looked that one up, I think you may have got 3 or 4 different answers anyway, because there is a lot of the pronunciations that even fans that are book readers couldn't always agree on. And it was like they would take maybe one narrator from an audiobook, oh, that's how you say it, and then another narrator would say it in a different way, and it'd go, oh, that was how I thought of it originally. So I think whatever these kind of, at the moment, just going with whatever the show picks is just going to be the canon now for pronunciation. So
it's kind of how you have to deal with it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Anything else you want to say about this week, Christine?
It's just...
Perrin and...
Yeah, exactly. It's like I'm trying to figure out what exactly is going on. So we've got one guy who's losing his mind. He's going crazy. One that's a wolfman. I don't quite know what's going to happen there. Got a magical girl. And then...
yeah.
I just saw her spin in my head covered in light.
Yeah.
It's an anime thing. Magical girl like Sailor Moon.
Yeah, kind of thing.
I know you know of it. That's mentioned it. And those types of characters always do the same transformation.
Yeah, exactly.
Some chant, spinning, light, and she called
this thing just goes over a green head, and then she's like, it's Wonder Woman. You are a channel.
Yeah, with some kind of power pose, or, you know, some kind of cute pose. Anyway.
And yet, what we got was a...
Yeah.
Instead, which was about and then, feeble.
Yeah, and then with Rand, I know. With Rand, it's kind of like, so he's part of some redheaded ethnic group or something, possibly. I don't quite know.
Right.
Yeah, and then the Ogier or something.
Ogier. Yeah.
I'm kind of curious about him too, and I found him very interesting. The talker.
I've quite a few things to say about him as well, I guess, when it comes to my turn. Okay,
about the grade of it?
Oh, the grade.
That's what I was
going
to say. What about your grade this week?
This one's hard. Because definitely not as... I mean, because it's... Yeah, it's definitely not as good as the other ones, I would say. But You know, I got to learn a lot, so maybe B?
B
plus?
B plus kind of thing. Somewhere in between.
This sounds really hard, yeah.
B in a nudge. B in a nudge.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Yeah.
Okay. Kale, what about you, man?
I actually didn't mind the episode at all. Yeah, it's slower than the others, but it's not slow in a bad way for me, I guess. Sure, I would have preferred to have seen more. What's the word I'm looking for? More to have gotten to the points and the big events a little bit faster. I feel like even some of this could have been folded into the previous episode and then into the next episode. But what's there is great. It's definitely I'm guessing. Maybe not all at once, but a lot of this, what these things mean, the different types of grieving and things are probably explained throughout the books, in a more digestible way over, you know, chapters instead of a single episode. But regardless, I really, appreciated getting to see what, you know, burial on a combat field is like, burial for Aes Sedai sisters and warders. Honestly, I when the warder, the green, what's her name, died, when he's dressed in white and he goes up,
Steppen.
Uh-huh. Yeah, he goes up to melt the ring. I was like, man, is this where we get the ritual suicide? Knowing that, sure enough, later on, it wouldn't be rituals. Yeah. Well, there might have been a ritual to it, but it wasn't like an ordained, like, you must now kill yourself. Mm-hmm. I even made a joke with Christine because Lan goes down to talk to Moraine, and I was like, Moraine, how's it going? Oh, it's going all right.
Something's so wrong with you.
That's what went through my mind, because they made such a big deal out of the Greens' relationship with their warders and how it goes above and beyond. Uh-huh. what we see with Lan and whatnot and Moraine. I was actually surprised when there wasn't a ritual suicide. Was not really surprised to see him off himself. It was very, very traumatic and clear that he really had no interest. Like, that was his purpose in life. And as someone that has dealt with combat, dealt with losing friends, no one near as near and dear to me as you know, the relationship that they build up here. But I can still understand things like survivors get guilt. I know what people that survive, friends and family committing suicide, like we see with Lan and the other warders. We know that there's a lot of conflicting feelings that go there. I've had to sit with soldiers being counseled or talking to me, and I've heard everything from thank God they're not hurting anymore to how selfish could that asshole be, you know what I'm saying? So I really appreciated getting to see all of this. Really interesting character development for the warders and the Aes Sedai sisters on a big scale. So I appreciate all of that. When it comes to Rand and Matt coming into the city and seeing Loghain coming into this city and them seeing him and whatnot, that was very, very interesting. They don't really give a lot away except Loghain can kind of...
This brings a good point to bring something up that I wanted to see if you've got any theories on. Why is Loghain laughing when he sees them?
My
theories?
I have one.
I was gonna...
You go. If you wanna... Yeah, you go.
I was gonna say you never know what's being put in audio for us or on screen for us versus for the people on screen, but they do, there's some audio cues in there. My guess is that Loghain either has, I don't think he has any residual connection, but I think he still has residual memory and has maybe seen Matt through what was talking to him. So.
Yeah, like he can see, like...
And he still remembers things that he's been told or been shown when he was connected.
Yeah.
Is this based on the theory then that you still believe that Matt can channel? Is that what you think is happening with Matt at the moment?
Like I said, I'm more along the like third party or parasite, mm-hmm. not that he is directly channeling himself. So mm-hmm. while Loghain mentions in the previous episode about being able to, you know, the thousand voices, thousand dragons before him, air quotes, mm-hmm. Talking to him, if it is indeed the dark one or the dark or whatever alternate being, the third party, then it would make sense that if Loghain's a major player, that other pieces would be mentioned to him. Maybe even, hey, I'm going to put this person in a certain place at a certain time, be on the lookout. And now Loghain just saw the piece in a certain place at the certain time.
Like that he
had
maybe recognized an image something like that.
I don't think he's... Like I said, they do put the audio cues in there, but I don't know if he's still got a connection to it or not. I think it's just he knows.
Yeah, I think it's like Matt, like where it's kind of like, you know, where you're in this moment and like all of a sudden everything goes quiet and you're like honing in. Mm-hmm. So I think it's like on Matt's end where he's like seeing Loghain.
And it then, could be even the things talking to Matt while Loghain is passing.
Yeah, but then like Loghain knows and he's looking up at him like, yeah, I know what's going on with you kind of thing.
Oh, interesting. Something okay. Like that. That's all I ever say, isn't it? You guys see something, I go, interesting. Interesting.
Yeah.
Because I don't know, what else can you see? Like, you've nailed it. No, that's complete bullshit. Try again.
I guess that covers quite a bit about them, but I will say that the, what's the creature's name?
The Ogier?
Ogier. Mm-hmm. That character reminded me of both like a beast on how well spoken and soft spoken and almost like, wow, you're about to make an awful decision. Oh, okay. Like I really appreciated that, but there's another character out there and I cannot remember it 100%. Because it's another one of those characters that is I think it was in a fantasy types series, very very knowledge seeking, but not necessarily. And I know, I'm not saying he comes off as not sounding smart, but mm-hmm. had just that really simplicity about them, despite this wealth of knowledge. So it's an interesting character. I'm interested to see more. And also kind of find out more about the non-humans in this fantasy world. There's a great kind of side piece to this, but within Final Fantasy, there's one world that's been explored multiple times, and that's the world of Ivalice, or Ivalice, depending on who wants to pronounce it. Ivalice is in Final Fantasy 12 Tactics and some others. There they do a really good job of having these non-human creatures that have really fleshed out cultures and unique biomes that they come from and how they have to adapt to live in different places. But it's not as ubiquitous as say like elves and like a high fantasy type thing.
Yeah.
It's very cool, and I kind of get the same feeling from that. Now on to Perrin and Egwene. Really, really, you know, interesting to see how the Tinkers all stand up for them to take a beating. What's his name tells them, you know, hey, they're not ones to likely kill us. They're just going to rough us up, but let's get you out of here. But the White Cloaks capture them. And anyways, the questioner guy is like, yeah, you're not an Aes Sedai, otherwise I would have killed you. I want you to decide either channel and I'll kill you, or he'll or you don't and I'll kill him.
Which him is being kind of psychopathic, ultimately, isn't it? Because he's saying, I'm killing someone. You know, even if you've done nothing wrong and the two of you are completely innocent, he's dying, you know, and you'll get to live.
It's almost like the old witch trial thing. Well, if she sinks, obviously she was innocent and good.
If she weighs more than a duck,
Exactly. So with that, when his eyes first go, it's like, okay, something related to the dogs, to the wolves, and
you can hear him in the background.
And then the second time when he comes back around, she tries to channel and throws a very, very weak fireball at him, which was funny. It was a fun little
although you
kind of
do see that she was really more interested in Perrin's ropes than she was actually.
Yeah, like she was planning it,
which is what I'm saying. It's like really it's a funny scene. It's a moment of levity in this really brutal torture scene, you know, psychological and physical torture. Mm-hmm. And so I like that. I like that they can work together as a team, and we're seeing the different pairs work together as teams in different ways. So all in all, despite it not necessarily being the best edited episode, where I think, you know, things could have been done differently, even like I said, pushing some of this into other episodes, which maybe is how it's done in the books. I still say this is a solid B+ episode, given the information that I was given and the progress I think that we've made in the story. I don't feel like I'm stuck. I think some people may have felt this episode left them kind of stuck, but I actually feel like I got a good deposit of info, and now I'm ready to go on the next higher octane episode.
I totally appreciate what you're saying. I think this episode's definitely a big setup episode for then the next stage, and I think that tends to be kind of what they're doing almost. You know, you have a lot of that set up and then they move into a kind of other event if we go through the episode so far, certainly the last couple. I'd grade it as a B- when I first did it, because I had a couple of issues. I've since upgraded it to B+, which is still not wonderfully fantastic. I still had some issues, but I just felt like I was being a little bit harsh once I had watched it again. My kind of main issue I had was really I didn't really like the funeral at the end. I thought it went a little bit too far. I get that, you know, these warders are stoic, you know, they don't talk much, they don't, you know, they have to bury people in combat or that sort of thing. And I think this was them trying to give Lan a bit of an opportunity to be, he was like the one chosen to display the emotion for the rest of them, if you like. But to me, it almost got like when he rips the shirt, you know, that's that classic. Yeah. Oh, I'm in pain, rip the shirt. I thought that was a bit too much and it kind of threw me. And the only thing that really saved me, or saved that scene for me, was a performance of Moraine in the background, because of course she has this bond with Lan. Mm. So she's feeling what he's feeling. Yeah. And she's not used to feeling those kind of emotions from Lan. So you see her visibly struggling to keep it together, despite the sort of normal Aes Sedai calmness in all situations kind of thing. And I think that probably tells you a little bit as well about why the first funeral where they were burying the actual Aes Sedai themselves a little bit calmer, because that's just the way Aes Sedai are. You know, they're not really the kind to get as flustered as that would, they would probably see that showing that kind of emotion as a weakness, you know, to them, and something that their enemies could exploit. And we do start getting into a lot of sort of White Tower politics this week, you know, Leandrin, what's going on, Moraine. Seems to be a kind of suggestion that the current Amyrlin seat, who I'm assuming appears next episode, given that she's on her way back from Camelin, they said at the moment that she's going to turn up, and she's Probably not going to be too happy with Moraine, it seems. So there's a lot of that, you know, which I think they're teasing the beginnings of, because there is a lot of White Tower politics in the story itself. I have to talk about a couple of things. I'm not going to go into all the... There's a lot of Easter eggs in this episode. A lot of little touches for book fans. And I think on second viewing, I did appreciate them a little bit more. Things that I would notice and go, oh, that's a bit of foreshadowing for something later on. Oh, yeah, I know why they've done that. And it's sometimes only in my second watch that I start to notice, okay, I can see why they're doing this. So I think I've got an idea about why they wanted to kind of get all that Warder bond, really hammer that into the audience at the moment, so that, you know, it's already there when they need to maybe pull in those strings again for further down the line, you know, kind of thing.
I mean, that makes sense.
I do have to talk about Loel, because I love Loel as a character in the books, and I was really worried about this character because I'd seen, and we'd covered in LRMonline.com, leaked images that had appeared of Loel, and to me, he just didn't look good at all. You know, that look for him, I think most fans were very taken aback by it. And the showrunner, Rafe Judkins, talked about how basically it's a choice. Lots of CGI on Loel, and you can't use them as often because it's more expensive. Or they make it much more practical, and then we can have them a lot in the show because it's easy to do. And they made that choice, and I just, you know, I was like, oh, you know, and he walks on screen, and I'm like, all right, here we go. And within about 30 seconds, I was like, yep, you made the right choice. Because the actor, Hamid, I forget his surname, his first name is Hamid, just embodies Loel so well. His mannerisms, the voice, the way it's just, it is him. Within 30 seconds, you're like, that's him, he's there on screen. And the look almost becomes kind of irrelevant at that point. And I'm already starting to get, you know, used to that, because the actor and the character itself is so perfect to the what I was expecting from the books, if you like. So I do have to give them plus points for something that I was worried about, and I think they really did pull off. Couple of changes I'm going to talk about, but not go into too much detail.
Can we do our ad for first camp?
We can do our ad.
Hate to cut into you there. Well, but I want to make sure we get into it. Yeah,
let's do our ad first.
All right, guys. Grow Generation, take it away.
Grow Generation, where the pros go to grow. The Grow Generation commercial team is armed with industry-leading professional consultants. Grow Generation's team will help you fully manage any size or scale project. They offer turnkey facility designs, cultivation room design, and on-site project consultation. Go to www.growgeneration.com, where the pros go to grow.
All right, thanks very much to our sponsors there. And thanks, everyone. We're back just talking about Wheel of Time Episode 5 again. I was just going over my thoughts as a book reader at the moment. Just going to start talking about a few changes that are of note, that are worth mentioning. And a couple of things that I'm going to see if you spotted as well, before we kind of get into everyone's theories and everything this week. So, one of the things was with Loel, who I was talking about earlier, was there was one scene where you said there was editing issues, and there was one real editing problem I had with Loel, and that's when he brings back Nynaeve. So we see Nynaeve in a corridor speaking to Leandrin, and Leandrin mentions you should go to the garden, and then all of a sudden, almost in the next scene, Loel's coming in with Nynaeve and saying, "Oh, look who I found in the garden." Mm-hmm. And it just didn't flow right to me. And what it only needed maybe 30 seconds. All we really needed was a shot of Nynaeve making the decision to go to the gardens, and then an earlier one of maybe Loel saying to Rand, "I'm going to go to the gardens up in, you know, Tower of Alon," and him maybe telling them about his friends or something like that. Because it was like we seemed to miss that, and that would have all made sense a little bit more.
Yeah.
And I wish they'd kind of added that in and cut maybe a couple other things out. But it was difficult because they squished so much into this episode. It's worth pointing out that Rand states that a month has gone by, right? So in the books, we would have saw that month. Them all getting there slowly, 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 and going through things, if you like. And they just kind of, they skip a lot of that. So therefore, they have a lot of little things to squish in to that little bit of time frame, if you like. Another thing I noticed was that, it does slightly concern me, is I'm wondering whether they have merged Leandrin's character with one that would come up later called Elida in the White Tower. And the reason that I think that is because of the conversation where I think it's Alana says to Moraine that Leandrin is one of the top contenders to go for the Amarylline seat if something was to happen to the previous one. And that's what kind of gave me the idea, maybe they're mixing those two characters together. And I'm actually not really against that at all. But if this is a weird one, if you were going to mix those two characters together, you'd call her Elida, because Elida's the more major character than Leandrin is, if that makes sense. So I'm kind of hoping I'm wrong and they're not doing it. I kind of, in my review, I said, if Elida doesn't show up with the Amarylline seat next week, she's not going to be in it, I think. But actually, I think back to some of the showrunners' comments on, you know, what's the point of bringing a character in for one season, one episode of a season, and then you don't see them again? It might be better to bring them into season two, for example, where we start to see them more often, and then it's better for recruiting that actor, getting them in the show and keeping them in it long term. So I'm now wondering whether they're maybe going to replace bringing Elida in at this point of the story and actually have her come in at season two, and we introduce to that character at that point. Because they're very similar characters, right, without me getting into too much detail, but there is one key fundamental difference between the two that just wouldn't make sense for each other's story for me, which I won't go into in any further way. Another change that I'm not sure I care about, actually, at all. But do you remember they had a little story, Steppen's telling a little story about the statues while he's lighting the candles, and he's saying, you know, to keep away the Forsaken. And they tell you a little bit about these historical characters from the past, if you like, that are called the Forsaken, which were basically humans that had knowingly and willingly turned to the dark side and, you know, completely sold their soul in a previous age and everything like that. And they're long locked away in prison and everything by the previous dragon. But there were actually 13 of them in the books. And I kind of think that they're going to reduce that number to 8 in the series. I don't know if it'll have any adverse effect, but it's just a strange change for them to make, I think, and one that I feel that they're hinting towards by only having 8 statues there, when there would have been 13 if they were following the books, if that makes sense. Anyway.
Maybe he hasn't collected them all.
You know, it could honestly be something as simple as that. But, you know, I don't want to go into it in too much detail, because I don't want to say how important it is, or if it isn't important at all. I don't want to lead people up the kind of garden path. But it'll be interesting to see anyway. And for anybody that is a book reader that's, you know, watching this to see what you guys think, it's the one thing that certainly stuck in my head. But overall, you know, I thought it was a good episode. I really kind of liked the introduction into the Aes Sedai politics and everything that was going on there. So I'm going to ask you some questions now, get into the decent bit, all right? And before I get into sort of the overall sort of theories and everything like that, I'm going to ask you a couple of things to see whether you picked them up in the show, because this is not spoilers. Did you find Padan Fain in the episode at all? Have you seen him yet? Padan Fain. Remember the guy that came up in episode 1 and he was whistling?
Yeah, I didn't
and
see him.
And then we heard his whistling in another episode.
I heard the whistle in another episode.
If you watch it back again, see the part where Loghain looks up at Matt and Rand, you can see Padan Fain there. He's down below and you can hear the whistling as well.
Wow.
So,
I'm gonna have to watch all 5 of these again. I'm missing everything.
And another one was, I wanted to ask your theories on this, because this is one book readers don't even know. So I'm able to even theorise on this one a little bit, right? Which is, what's going on with that picture that Moraine was looking at the end? You know, when she opens it up and there's just a picture inside. Mm-hmm. And I've looked at this picture closely and it's just another woman in a blue dress looking out a window. So it's almost mm-hmm. like she's watching, like, on, you know, to a very mm-hmm. similar scene that she's in herself at the moment. Did you have any theories about what that might be?
Or? I don't know. I didn't see it move. So it's, I don't think it's like Dorian Gray or anything like that, where the, you know, I don't think it's like that.
No, it was completely static. It just looks like a normal picture.
Yeah, but it's kind of weird because normally when you have a picture, you're not seeing someone's back. So it's like, why is it painted that way? I don't know what's going on.
All right, so my theory is that there is an ally of Moraine's who has put that picture there, and that she is telling Moraine to watch her blonde back, because the blue dress and the character looked a little bit Moraine like. Now, this isn't in the book, so this is just a theory mm-hmm. of myself. I'm not saying this is true. This is just my take on it. I think it's a very secretive way that no one else would be able to work out, of someone being able to communicate with Moraine that nobody else could see, and basically telling her watch your back at the moment, because as we saw, Aes Sedai politics, and Moraine is not exactly flavour of the month, it seems. What do you think about that? Does that work for you, or, you know?
I think that'd be cool.
I mean, it's been there for a while. Though I'm guessing it doesn't look like
the
she
Moraine doesn't normally go to the tower, does she? She's very rarely ever there.
That's true. And I guess without the information of, because she doesn't seem to react like, oh, this is a curious thing. She seems to open it purposefully, but it's not really clear on what that purpose is. I did find it weird that it was in one of the a box, if you will, very similar to the Catholic 12 signs of the cross or whatever that are usually distributed around the church. It's often, not all the time, because a lot of military bases, they have like one chapel and it suits all the religions. They just accommodate different times for it. So if you're a Protestant, you're going to run into things that are Catholic. You're going to run into things that are Islamic and Jewish and all that, depending on the base and how many buildings they have allotted to that. And again, I after the first episode, I kind of put the whole, you know, stop looking for real connections to the world that I know, but you are dealing with a pseudo theological politic thing going on. Yeah. So I was like, maybe there's something to it. So I'm not necessarily convinced that it's not connected to the One Power. I do agree that I think it's messaging, but I'm curious as to whether or not there's something else to it. But I am in agreement with you, Cam, that messaging is part of it. I just
what's
don't
interesting
know
is we saw that specific. We saw Moraine going to that thing in the mm-hmm. first episode, in the opening, when she starts talking in the very first cold open, and she's putting all her costume on and she opens that, but you don't get to see what's inside. Mm-hmm. You only see her head mm-hmm. and darkness, you know, around it because the light's not shining in it. So we have no idea what was in it at that point, and whether exactly. it was any different, you know, or anything like that. So it's
image?
A funny thing that it could be absolutely nothing, but it's kind of got all the book readers and non-book readers going together. Right, what the hell do we think this is over the weekend? So it's just an interesting thing I thought I'd bring up.
Yeah.
Okie dokie. So I've asked you quite a few things already about, you know, what did you think about Loghain laughing? I asked you if you'd noticed Padden Fain, and you hadn't. Well, now that you know he is there and that he's showed up a few times, what do you think's going on with Padden Fain, if anything?
I don't know, but yeah, he had mentioned that, Kyle had mentioned that he thought that there'd be something important about him, not just that he sold crap, you know, a traveling salesman. So I don't quite know what's gonna happen, but just like based off of the look of him, he just doesn't seem like a good guy, of course. So it's like, what is he?
Why is he always with those two, or some of the, I mean, I guess they were all together the last time we saw him, where they were in Shadar Lagoth, but how does he get into Shadar Lagoth? He gets out, you know, they all get chased out and everything like that. He seems okay. And then he's behind them again. They lost the Trollocs, and there he is. He's in Tar Valon, and they see him again. So, yeah. There has to be a reason for it. Obviously.
Merchants are used very, very cleverly in a lot of writings, and that's because they have been a very unique group of people in human history, going from a class during like the Roman Empire, if I'm not mistaken, to where they have power because they move the goods, but they weren't necessarily looked well upon, to where you get to merchants in the colonial ages sail, to where that's a bigger deal. Like if you're running corporations and things like that.
And merchants have a lot of power. And I think that's something that I'm not guaranteed that they'll do this in the books, but in some places they go to in the books later on. I remember one specific, this isn't spoilers in any way, but where, rather than being a royalty, it's that city's run by the merchants. There's like a guild you know, because they're the most powerful people in the city, kind of thing. So yeah, it's something that's used in this already.
And you kind of see often in fantasy literary works where they combine the two, and you'll have the merchant that is the street level merchant, maybe even kind of shady and grody, but that is the key guy. Like everything, or girl, everything's gonna go through them eventually. They're holding the keys to the kingdom, and I'm not sure on which side he's going to be on, but I mean, you show this merchant character dealing with stuff, and he obviously knew what Matt had was worth a little bit more than what he was leading on. I don't know how much more, but I already got the just knowing history and then knowing some literary history, my eye has been on him, and I've noticed the whistle. I didn't notice him specifically, but I've noticed the whistle multiple times.
Yeah. I think the whistle's that kind of cue that if you hear it but you've not got time while you're watching the episode, it's like, I better watch that bit back later, because so, you know, they're probably going to tease him at some point.
I'm not sure that he's
I think that it's more like
I do think he's like his gray area, though. But yeah,
like I think it's like where maybe it's like a separate agenda that could be, because it's like it wouldn't make sense if he knew the Trollocs are coming, and it's like, why wouldn't he do something? I don't know, like, hey, I got free tea, drink, and then they're all drugged and like, here you go, you know. So it wouldn't make sense if he was like a straight up bad guy, and so I think it's like maybe something separate.
I suppose. You know, that's true. But, you know, it depends how cowardly someone is, I guess, and what their job is, I suppose. You know, whether that would be the case. Do you think he's more possibly a force for good? I don't know if maybe that would be the right force word to use.
For himself, or maybe the status quo.
Again, right, I get you.
But yeah, he definitely has the... He's got the job where he can go anywhere, and you know, no one's going to be suspicious of him, because you know. So it's
true. Okay, so the kind of last question, which I'm going to get you, is the usual: who the hell is the Dragon Reborn? But we're going to take it in a slightly different point of view. So we're going to try and rule some things out, and you know, do it that way. So of the five Two Rivers people so far, right? Mm-hmm. Which has to be one of those five people, would you agree?
You're supposed to believe that, yes. Yeah.
Right, okay. Unless it's somehow Moraine or something like that. So, but obviously, we know Moraine can channel. We now know Nynaeve and Egwene can channel. Mm-hmm. Question is, can any of the boys channel, do you think?
Yeah, they kept talking about Matt. being able to channel but haven't done it yet. But he's clearly losing his marbles. So
magic parasites will do that too.
Potentially.
Yeah.
If Matt, have we seen him use that ability at any point? Has he channeled yet? Maybe you don't even think he can channel. I don't know. Maybe I'm putting words in your mouth. Sorry.
If he did, like with that family's house when they were like staying in the barn, you know, I thought that, you know, maybe he had done it then, but didn't know it. He'd killed them, but he wasn't aware that he was the one doing it. So maybe something like that.
I still don't know that he's channeling himself directly. Like I said, the one thing that we kind of get to see is like that shadowy stuff coming out of his mouth several times, which isn't 100% even like the dark channeling that Loghain had done. It looked a little bit different. So I don't think Perrin channeled. I think that's its own thing.
So you don't think Perrin can channel? No.
At least we haven't seen him do it. The wolf thing again looks almost like a possession type thing with the eyes and whether or not it's, I'm not saying he's being possessed by something externally, but like an animal's spirit type possession, something that's within him that he can bring out. Maybe I'm not 100%.
A wolf whisperer.
Sure, something like that. But I don't think it's like weaving with the one power as Egwene and Nynaeve have.
Okay.
So I don't think the guys have channeled yet, but that doesn't
mean... We've not spoke about Rand, so you're just ruling him out?
Yeah, he's still that odd character where you're like, almost you'd be upset if they do make it him. And the way that they low-key him throughout the series so far in the show. You know, hey, look over here, look over there. It's kind of like, if you go that route, it's a little too stereotypical, and I have more faith in the show than that. So I'd actually be kind of upset if it does end up being him, just because of the way they've portrayed it, and to go so stereotypical after not being so stereotypical would be upsetting, but they could still
they're hinting stuff towards other ones and not him, you know, or deliberately going away from him.
Whether it's deliberate or not, I'm not sure, but I don't count the guys out. What if in anything, I think the whole focus on the one power and weaving and whatnot, channeling, I think that might be blind spots for the Aes Sedai, ignoring additional abilities and powers that are out there that could potentially be attributed to the dragon be reborn, because it has been so long. Word of mouth you know, the game of telephone does change things.
What's the information they've told us so far about the Dragon Reborn? What's the one thing that they've made clear about the Dragon Reborn so far?
Age and...
In terms of, they've also made it clear that the dragon is the most powerful channeler of the One Power. So I think you can, just based on the information that's in the show so far, we can say that whoever the dragon is must be someone who might not have channeled yet, don't get me wrong, but who can channel the One Power.
Absolutely. And that's why I'm thinking about those additional powers out there like pairing with the wolves, is it's like, if they're supposed to be all powerful, shouldn't they be able to do more than what people that are out there using it now can do? And I haven't seen an Aes Sedai control animals yet, or get animals to come and help them like that yet. So that's my thought on it.
Yeah.
Okay. So does that mean, can I read from that you guys are still on the Perrin train in terms of who the Dragon Reborn is at the moment? From last week,
I am, where you were at last moment.
A little bit. I mean, it's still kind of like it's confusing, but it's still like I still lean more toward Perrin. So I guess we'll just have to wait and see.
Interesting. Okie dokie. So there's one last question that I've got for you, which is just one of our listeners had actually said that we should finish up every episode with. So this is something that we'll kind of bring into every episode, and you may change your answers as we go along. Your answers may be just, I've no idea, but I'm going to ask you this basically at the end until we get to the end of the season. So I'll start with you first, Kyle. In terms of the season, where's it going? Where do you see the conflict? And how do you think this season might be resolved by the time we get to episode 8? Have you got any ideas whatsoever?
My guess is this season will end up with us knowing who the Dragon Reborn is and having the clearer political lines of the White Tower. So I think we're going to find out why people aren't necessarily happy with Moraine, and also why Moraine does have support and why she's doing things the way she has been, which we don't know everything. We know she's been searching for the Dragon Reborn, but we don't know all of the details. So that's where I think we're going. We're getting all the pieces will be on the board, and we'll finally get. Of course, it's not going to be there's always the fog of war, if you will. So, but I think we're going to actually get the chessboard, if you will. We'll have a clear picture of who's on the board, who's your queen, who's your king, you know, which side's white, which side's black, that type of thing. And I think that's the big resolve is who's the Dragon Reborn, and then what are the lines, where are houses for you Game of Thrones fans out there. That's what I think we're heading to for this season.
Okay. Christine, do you agree, disagree, anything different?
I agree, but there's one thing that I don't know if they'll answer, and that's because they had mentioned in this episode about another color. I think it was yellow or gold.
They mentioned yellow. Yeah.
So it was like, you know, I don't know if they're going to reveal all of them to us this season. So I think with what Kyle had said is yes, but I think that's one thing that maybe they'll leave to season two. You know, because, I mean, unless they're just going to have like a sit down and like, okay, here's all the colors. This is what they mean, you know, that kind of thing. But I don't think we're going to. I don't think we're going to see them all, you know, and see what they're all like. I think they'll maybe leave that for season two for some of them.
I would say, I mean, I don't even know for certain whether that answers yes or no. My guess would be if we do see something like that, it would be next week. If the Amaryllis Seat comes back next week, if that's, I mean, I don't know for just because they say she's on her way back, I don't know that she's going to be in next week. It could be the one after that, theoretically, but that would be my guess. And that would be the time where we would see more of the Aegis, theoretically, if we're going to see them. So it's not something that even I could say for definite yes or no, that we'll kind of know all that by the end of the season at this point. So yeah, I'll be interested to see how that kind of shapes out next week, and if they do introduce any of the other Aegis, which I obviously don't want to talk about until they mention them in the show.
Yeah, because I mean, it's kind of like things have sped up, yes, but it's like I don't really know if they're gonna leave the cliffhanger of her showing up at the end of the season, because I mean, travel, it's not like she could take a plane. So it's like, how long is it going to take her? How quick is the pacing for the next episodes? I mean, I don't know.
They mentioned is very close, relatively speaking, to Tavalon. It's a very closely aligned with Tavalon in the books. So, you know, in the books, the characters actually go to Camelon first, then Tavalon, weirdly. But they've kind of skipped Camelon, if you like, and kind of put everything to Tavalon, just which was the main reason was so they didn't have to build a different city that looked different and then not use it again till sometime in season two, you know. So they were, I think they were making decisions for budgetary concerns with that as well. So.
Well, then that changes what I thought, because I thought, you know, it'd be like, because I mean, like, if you look at like Lord of the Rings, it took them three movies to get to the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, there was no, like, they had a month skip at the start of this episode and you didn't get anything like that in Lord of the Rings. And given that it was a movie and this is, you know, but it just shows you how much of that first book is really them walking through the countryside in their three different groups, do you know what I mean? There's only so much you can show that in a show before people go, oh,
this was
episode
the first
six
movie.
And Rand and Pern have moved into a field now, and you know, and because you're just not getting all that internal stuff that's going on in their heads.
Because you never know if they're going to change the pacing, because it's like, you know, cut out what you don't need, leave what you do need. So it's like, I didn't know if they were going to, you know, have some changes on that end. But yeah, so I'm going to take back what I said, because now I don't know.
I think it's, I suppose from a book reader point of view, in terms of my theories of where the season's going to go, it's a bit difficult to say, because I think there's a couple of events that I assume they would have to, you know, include at some point. So I'll kind of keep my own thoughts to myself on that one for this podcast. One kind of just final thing I wanted to mention is that I think as we go on to future seasons, I'll probably start asking you like questions like, where's this all going in terms of the overall story? I feel like we're just too early in for that, because for all you know, it could end up a sci-fi thing like Star Wars at this point. I mean, it literally could go anywhere, couldn't it? You know, and I don't think it's fair to kind of ask you those kind of questions yet. Anything else you guys want to say before we wrap up then?
No. Good.
I think we covered it.
You covered it. All right. Great. Well, that's been episode 3 of The Dragon Reviewed, guys. Please tune in next week. We will have episode 4, and we will be covering, obviously, episode 6 of the show. That will leave us with 2 weeks left after that. It is 8 episodes for the first season. I have heard on the grapevine that 6 is supposed to be a good one. A lot of people that watched it in advance, they kind of... You know how, like, 4 was a pretty good one? People were as complimentary about 6, so I'm a little bit hyped for next week to see what we get, but I guess we'll just need to wait and see how it all shakes out.
Everyone can enjoy the wait by checking out lrmonline.com and genreverse.com.
Absolutely.
And absolutely go check out our sponsors, Grow Generation. If you aren't subscribed to our YouTube channel, guys, we're almost at 5,000 subscribers. 110 left to go. Can you please help us get there by the first of January? That'd be awesome. A lot of great celebrity interviews, all the great podcasts and anime versal reviews, The Dragon Review, Daily Cup of Genre, Breaking Geek, Marvel Multiverse Madness, Mayhem, sorry. And then, of course, The Cantina. The Genreverse Podcast Network, wherever you get your podcast from. Leave some comments. And like Cam said, we'll bring the questions and comments up here on the show. So thank you guys for watching.
Yeah, thanks. Okay, everyone, see you next week. Bye.